And joining us now on the phone is Mary Rockefeller Morgan. She is the author of a new book this year, Beginning with the End, a memoir of twin loss and healing. Mary, thank you so much for joining us on the Roadhouse.
Well, I'm happy to be with you.
I told our listeners earlier, and just want to cover this again, this book is basically a journey, if you will, of your recovery over the death of your twin brother. If I'm not mistaken, there were about six siblings in your family. You had a twin brother, Michael, and in 1961, at the age of 23, he disappeared off a very remote coast in New Guinea. He was down there, I believe, collecting artifacts, art for a museum in New York.
Yes.
And, you know, as you wrote the initial, first of all, thank you for the book. It's a powerful book, and thank you for the courage in writing it, because it must have taken a lot of courage.
I appreciate that.
But it's also no secret that Nelson Rockefeller was your father. And at the time of this tragic accident, your father was governor of New York. A couple of months prior to that, he had announced that he was divorcing your mother. Within a couple of days of this happening, he had a press conference where he announced that he was going to marry the woman with whom he'd had the affair. Then you learn of your brother's disappearance. You and your father get on a plane and fly to New Guinea, you primarily because all your siblings had family. Your husband was a naval officer and gone. You fly down there, accompanied by what seemed like hundreds, was probably dozens of reporters of all things. And you're 23 years old. I can't imagine what that experience must have been like.
Well, it was pretty difficult. It was pretty challenging. The reason I went with Father was because Michael is my twin, and I say is because we don't ever lose the relationship that we have. When a wife loses their husband, they're still a wife. So I'm still a twin, and so that's why I went, because he was my twin. It's true that my sisters and brothers were all involved with families, and I didn't have any children, yet I had just gotten married.
Mm-hmm.
So we went out there, and it was very, very challenging. There's no question about it, because it was a hugely different culture. It wasn't that that was so challenging, but the land is really amazing. It's with total jungle, just a jungle with that meets the ocean in a kind of swamp land, so you couldn't really tell when the ocean stopped and the jungle began. The water was just, it's all swamp, and then there are these huge rivers that bisect this jungle. And Michael lost his life when his boat capsized, and the small boat he was on traveling to these different remote little villages where these amazing sculptors were doing this fantastic art. And he had to cross a big delta of the Landen River, huge choppy current, a full moon, enormous currents in the ocean itself, and the outdraft from this big river, and it swamped the two canoes with a supporting raft in between, and an outboard motor. It just swamped the boat, and so they pretty well clung to it as it was swept out to sea, tried to paddle back, but it wasn't possible. So Michael began to swim at about 12 miles out, knowing that that was about the only hope.
Mm-hmm.
The man who was with him, the anthropologist and translator, really didn't swim very well. And also, there were no boats, no planes. It was just obvious that they weren't going to see anybody, and they had no food and water. That had been swept away. So he lost his life. We never saw or heard from him again.
Yeah. And being there and looking for him, wondering whether he's alive, hoping against hope that he still is.
Yeah.
But then to have all those reporters around, and you even pointed out some of the
dreadful things they said.
I was trying to be kind, Mary, as reporters can do. That it almost seems like a circus.
It was a very bizarre, crazy thing. And the thing is that in the beginning of deep personal loss, any great loss, people go into a place of numbness and isolation anyway. Mm-hmm. But I think because of my family, the fact that father was governor and there were so many reporters, there were really over 100 reporters in the small village where we instigated the search from, which was south of the Asmont area. And that made it much, much worse for me. So I was put into a place where I felt totally out of relationship with the people around me and really, really frightened inside myself. But the numbness came as a kind of protection.
Mm-hmm.
But it did throw me into a very lonely, disconnected place, which was very bad.
No.
The big thing was that we didn't find him, and we went home. And Bob, I thought then I would be able to connect with my mother, who was just a wonderful, wonderful person. But she really let me know that the one thing we couldn't do was cry.
Yes, I remember you saying that.
And that
you must get hold of yourself, Mary. The one thing we cannot do is cry.
Yeah. And, I mean, she did that out of a kind of protection for me. I know it. Because she had lost her husband and was losing her son, I think she also felt that if she started to cry, she might never stop.
How much, you know, one of the things that I wondered is, you in the book, you deal with the fact that your true work, and we'll get to that, your true work on your grief was put off for many years for a variety of reasons. And I'm wondering about, like, that approach from your mother. Also, you talked about your father and the fact that he never was affected by a setback or a failure. How much being a Rockefeller, Mary, do you think held you back from healing?
I think it was a part, mm-hmm. but not the major part. I think I was coming, don't forget it was 1961, and in 1961 we were still really driven by the mores of the 50s. We hadn't run into the amazing 60s revolution, which just turned so much of our social way of interacting upside down. And so that really was a major reason. And also, Michael was never found.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't have that kind of closure of having a certainty that he was dead. So I think that and the Rockefellers and what Mother said, all of that worked to stop what I think is so important to understand, and that is that we have a natural healing imperative or process that belongs to us. It is activated just in a trauma, in a situation of deep loss, just like it is when you cut your hand. I mean, and the physical processes of healing start. We have a psychological process, but that process was aborted. Then when I really finally broke down with all the different stress I was involved in, and I talk about in the book, but then my therapist said, you know, you can't be grieving after 7 years, Mary, like this. You've got to move on. Use the word move on.
Mm-hmm.
Move on, because you're not really an identical twin. You're a fraternal twin. You only share 50% of the DNA with your twin. And, you know, everybody, your siblings have moved on. Well, now we know that was a mistake, a big mistake he made.
You know, you talk that your brother in New York was declared dead in 1964,
yes.
Formally declared dead. And you said that after that, you began to see him. You would see him, you thought you'd see him on a subway or on a street corner, and you'd go up to somebody and it wasn't him. How long did you go thinking that your brother was still alive?
Well, I think that my therapist, which was after 7 years, that was after three, 4 years, I think he, because he was an authority symbol and a very strong one, a psychiatrist and a very strong authority symbol, and I was used to male authority symbols, certainly my father had been a big one, I wasn't strong enough to see that he was wrong, and I really believed that he was right in my rational mind. I believed that Michael couldn't be alive. But in my heart, This is a fascinating thing, Bob, because in grieving, people have different levels of knowing inside themselves. So there was a deeper level that felt like, you know, I wasn't ready to let him go,
mm-hmm.
and that he had to be alive. So then it's not unusual for people to think they saw somebody like that.
Sure.
They still thought he was alive. And, you know, then I would get up to the person on the street and find out it wasn't that person, or either that or they would disappear in the crowd, and mm-hmm. then I would never see them. And I didn't even dare tell my therapist about it because I didn't trust him.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't trust him because he didn't believe in where I was.
We're visiting
this
with
is a sad thing.
Excuse me, Mary. We're visiting with Mary Morgan, the author of Beginning with the End, a memoir of twin loss and healing. You, at the time of Michael's death, you were married. You went on to have three children with that husband, and eventually it ended in divorce. You then met Tom, who would become your next husband. Unfortunately, that marriage ended in divorce. You had a relationship with Jeremy. I'm wondering, as I read it, Mary, whether or not with these people that you're in a relationship with that unfortunately didn't last, were you in fact trying to make, I'll ask it this way, trying to make them Michael?
Definitely.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely. I think that is a big issue for twins after they lose a twin, is that they keep looking for that twin in another relationship. They don't do that in their conscious mind, but subconsciously they do that. And then it's very, very difficult because they bring this expectation for twin intimacy into a relationship that can't possibly meet those expectations.
Mm-hmm.
The people just don't have that immediate understanding and intimacy, because twins grow in relationship from the moment of conception. And they are reaching out to each other in early connection in the womb from 14 weeks of age. So this twin bond and twin sense of togetherness and pairedness, which is a kind of intimacy, is there inside them, and they can't find that in another relationship.
Even though they try.
No, they yeah. try, but they can't. And so that's part of the healing process, and it's what I deal with twins when I work with them.
You were talking about your mother, and I thought it was particularly poignant when you wrote about the fact that she finally decided, okay, we're going to start putting Michael's things away, and actually use the phrase, we need to let go of his things. And they kind of were put in storage, and then sometime later, shortly thereafter, your siblings kind of were there and taking what they thought they would like to have of his. And the line you wrote was, his life was being dismembered. That was
yeah.
so graphic.
Well, I wasn't ready at all. And so his things were being divided, which was very understandable between his siblings. And then we chose things for his really dear friends. And that was all understood. That was not a mean thing to do. That was a proper thing to do.
Sure.
But I wasn't ready. So I just felt like the things were symbolic of him, and he, as I said, he was being dismembered, and it just made me so unbelievably despairing inside. And I wasn't ready, and I wasn't ready to acknowledge his death and to grieve his loss until I really first understood thoroughly that how important my twinship was.
Yeah.
Beyond what my therapist said, one, and two, that this grieving, you know, I had to develop a sense of identity on my own. That's one of the things that you learn, that twins have this challenge in the grieving process, because they often don't have a chance to develop their own identity, depending on how they're brought up by their parents or the loved ones that raised them. And so when they don't do that, then they don't want to let go. They have such a hard time letting go the physical manifestation of the loved one who is no longer there.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to do that in order to reframe the relationship which belongs to you forever and the love that belongs to you forever, so that you can hold that you know, without a lot of pain, and it can nourish your life. You have to let go of that physical manifestation, and I wasn't ready to do it until way in. I was 27 years before I really was ready to do it.
And in the interim, you, from the time that you lost your brother, you, as we mentioned, you had a couple of divorces, lost a relationship. Your dad died. You had a very, very good friend, Mary Margaret Goodrich, who passed away. And then 27 years after the loss of your brother, with all those losses in between, you went on a vision quest in 1988.
Yes.
And that, can you and just tell a little bit how you feel that led to your healing?
I knew that the tears and the grief were coming, and I knew I had to find a safe place. And so there was something called returning to Earth, which my sister actually told me about. It was the journey of returning to Earth. It was run by three psychologists, very, very, you know, grounded, good therapists. And it was, but they were taking you out into nature because they felt that nature could also help people to do their grieving and to see how connected death and life are together, and to show you how important that was in the moving forward with your grieving process. So I spent a week with them in a meditation lodge at the base of the San Juan Mountains, and we did group therapy together. Then we went up into the mountains and we camped, and then I went off on a 4-day solo. All of us did, all 15 of us. It was very big and it was very frightening, and I did it, and I was just so grateful that I had the courage to finally do that, and it was so beautiful for me because I found that I could complete Michael's life in terms of bearing witness to him as my beloved twin, doing the ceremonies that I had never been able to be present for in my heart. I just repressed all of them, so I don't remember the memorial service or the grave service or anything. It was a memorial grave because he obviously there was no body, but I don't remember any of that. So I did all of that on this time when I was alone in the wilderness when I was camping. It was so beautiful, and I remember one really special thing that happened to me. I woke up one morning, and there was a beautiful sunny morning, and that this rays of sunlight were coming through these huge pines, and they shafted through the pines onto a bunch of beautiful birch trees, one of whom had died and fallen over, and the silver birch bark was split open, and within that birch bark was the most beautiful garden you have ever seen. It was growing out of the loam, out of the earthy, of the earth that had, the heart of the tree had turned into earth, and there was a garden of tiny little baby birches, of beautiful tiny pine trees, flowers, mushrooms. It was the most beautiful thing, and in my heart, I knew in one moment that Michael was safe, that somehow Michael was that new life was happening for my brother, and that new life could happen for me if I let it go.
Following that, in 1991, you became a therapist, and started working with twins who had lost a twin, even to the point of working with people who had lost a twin in 9/11.
Yes.
In a few moments, can you tell us how all of that came to be?
Well, I mean, that was an amazing thing because I'd had one twin that I worked with who came to me in therapy whose twin was murdered, and that was an incredible experience that I had with that young man, healing experience, and I wanted to work with more twins, but I couldn't find anybody. It was the days before Google and all of that, and so then 9/11 happened, and they wrote in the New York Times about this twin who had lost his twin in that disaster. And to make a long story short, I got in touch with a reporter. 3 weeks later, I was working with this twin. And then the wife of this twin, who was also a therapist like me, was in search of the other twins that had lost their life. There were 46 twins that lost their life in the huge disaster, including the Pentagon and the planes. But there were twins that were in the tri-state area of New York where I live. So I began to work with those twins both in private, work one-on-one and then in group work, which I did for 2 years. Huh. These twins were amazing, the work they did with each other. You know, we heal, Bob, in connection. We heal in connection with ourselves in terms of our own feelings, being willing to really be present and express our feelings. We heal in connection to other people. And we did, and you heal in connection to people who understand you. These twins trusted, understood each other, and were willing to express their feelings. And it was a beautiful thing to be a witness to that.
Do you still work with twins?
I do. I've been on sabbatical because I'm trying to put together a new book on working with twinless twins in therapy. This would really be for therapists. Many of my twins or people I meet say that their therapists just don't understand the length of time it takes for the bereavement of people, not only twins, but also people who've had deep personal loss.
I think you mentioned that it took you 6 years, probably it took you actually longer than that. It was probably in the works longer than that, but it took you 6 years to write the book. What impact on your healing did writing the book have?
Well, what it did is it deepened. It deepened my healing. And also, you know, what you find in the healing is a cyclical thing. And the memories come up, and you think you're doing just fine, and then all of a sudden, wacko, you get thrown back into a place of deep grief because a particular smell or song or something brought up a memory. Your body is then present. Your body-mind knows that you are ready to face that particular part of your healing. A long, long time later, after I had found some literature that had been filed that belonged to my father, I found out more about the details of Michael's last moments before he swam. And I had to face at that point how deeply guilty I felt, what shame I felt for not being able to be with him when he died, because we were born together, and it just felt like it was wrong that I wasn't able to be there to support him. That is a completely, unrealistic thing.
Sure,
and I
sure.
knew my brother he wouldn't even have needed, have wanted, not that he wouldn't have, but he would have known that that was a ridiculous thing that couldn't happen. But I needed to work through that last piece.
Hmm.
And that was, 40 years later.
Sure.
So we just have to have faith in the fact that our body minds know what they're doing and that we don't need to be frightened of our emotions. I have a wonderful life of moving forward and of meaning. We all can have that if we claim our healing process.
The name of the book is Beginning with the End, a memoir of twin loss and healing. The author is Mary Rockefeller Morgan. She has joined us this evening. Mary, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to be with us.
Well, I am very, very pleased that you interviewed me. Thank you so much, Bob.
Thank you. Take care.